Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And Gabe, you got to talk about what the heck is going on with your voice.
There was a holiday yesterday, public holiday yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it was because I was out partying.
That's what it sounds like you were screaming or smoking.
I was in bed, sick. I got a kind of laryngitis type thing. Strep throat. That's it.
You have strep throat right now?
No, but it sounds like it.
Okay. So, yeah, for the rest of this part, Gabe is just going to sound...
I'm
going to
do my best.
Like that. He's going to do his best. I'm going to give your larynx a little break here and talk some of the science studies that we're going to talk about today. I've got three of them total.
Yeah.
I'm going to go from what I think is the most relevant for most people out there down to the least relevant.
All right, get them out of the way.
Let me get these out of the way. This one is pretty easy to understand. It's about what happens when you ask young women to stop using social media for 1 week.
It's probably very good for them.
It's very good for them. And specifically, it improves their perception of their own body.
Of course.
Right? Because you're not constantly forced to make comparisons between...
See how much better everyone else is doing it.
Yeah. Well, everyone who, for a variety of reasons, they're posting images, their best images of themselves. Sometimes they're digitally manipulating those images using filters or other tools to shrink the size of their hips or enlarge other parts. And it makes you feel bad. Mm. And so in this particular study, it was small. That's one caveat. It's a start and there should be more of them. It was done in the Toronto area and they took a total of 66 women, ages 17 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
And one caveat to this is they told them pretty explicitly what they were going to do. Look, you are going to take a break from social media and we're going to ask you later about your perception of your own body. And you are not going to take a break from social media. And later we're going to ask you about your perception of your own body.
Okay.
And so everyone knew going in.
All social media, every single.
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter. So four. The biggest results, as I already said, was in terms of body image. So if you're in the group that didn't take a break from social media.
Kept on posting and reading posts. Yeah.
Yeah. If you rated yourself at the beginning of the week, you would have said I had roughly on the how happy am I with my body scale, I'm a 5 out of 9. From 1 to 9, I'm a 5. 1 week later, well, nothing about their lives has changed at all.
I'm assuming it's 5.
It's a 5. Yeah. So you take the other group, it was a 5. And 1 week later, it had jumped up to a 6.
Wow.
Which is significant. They had other improvements in terms of social state, self-esteem, how good they feel about themselves going out in social situations. Across the board, this was basically a verification of a study from 2022. Lambert was the lead author on that one, where they established effectively the same thing. And I believe in that study, what was interesting is that it wasn't as true or even true at all with males. That one was more, I believe that one was more about Instagram. Mm-hmm. And when they had guys hop off Instagram, didn't really do much for them. Didn't improve. So
this advice is specifically for females out there, and especially young ones?
For young women, kind of late high school into college age. Take a break. Yeah. I mean, how much does this really help you? Because what was interesting is the group that said that they weren't going to go on social media still averaged, if I did the math right, about 3 hours that week. They couldn't help themselves. They had, even though they had app lockers.
Down from some other number, probably. Though.
Down from 30 was the other group. So they're still kind of barely using it. They can't help it. But the takeaway here is not just that you're going to be happier. I think more important, how would you establish this so that you can do it consistently over time and not get sucked back in? But it's a nice place to start, nice place to think about.
Okay, what else we got?
Okay, next one is another trend, speaking of all these platforms. I don't know if you've come across it. I've seen it again and again and again and again over the last 2 years. This is ice baths or ice plunges.
I remember that. Yeah.
Like a hot tub but filled with ice.
Yeah, you these go online in challenges that you have to do. And
yeah, and it's to the point that
celebrities start it and then everyone else imitates it and spreads through the...
Celebrities informed by whoever's advising them on health or sports topics. You have gym influencers, all these... And it spread, I was going to say like wildfire, but I need a metaphor that would be like ice.
Wild ice.
It spread like wild ice.
Yeah.
So in this particular meta study, they looked at 8 studies to try to figure out... It was specific to if you've done resistance training, weight training, or calisthenics, something to basically make your muscles burn, not cardio stuff.
Wait, freeze yourself after working out?
A lot of people do that. Gabe, do you remember? Sorry, we got back in the corona time. We got a little bit into this YouTube guy who calls himself Athlean.
Athlean X?
Yeah. Do you remember him?
Oh, man. Yeah.
He had a video that was, the title was like, if you don't take a cold shower after pumping, you will lose all of your gains.
Oh, no.
Right?
I forget that
And
one,
I remember looking at that, and that was a moment. I'm serious, because I had sort of trusted him on most things. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I thought, I'm not sure that's true.
This phenomenon has been looked into? Or?
This is what they've looked into.
What did they find?
Yeah, what they found is basically the ice bath, if anything, will attenuate or reduce the muscle growth that would normally happen after hypertrophy, or that feeling you have when you've burned your muscles up and they're kind of throbbing, pulsating, and they're going to grow the next day.
Okay.
That the vasoconstriction that happens, so basically the ability of blood to flow through your body, gets changed by the ice cold waters, and hence the repairing effects and the muscular growth that would happen as a result, or that would normally happen if you didn't hop in the ice water, that slows it down.
Okay.
And that it's not, basically, if you want to get big and strong and have big muscles, this is not what you should be doing. If you have inflammation, this could be cellular injury, this could be an actual injury, an irritant, you could have pathogens in your body.
Ice it.
Correct. Yeah. So it's not.
That brings on the inflammation.
Yeah. So they were looking at something very specific. If you're lifting weights or you want your muscles to get bigger, an ice bath or ice shower is not the way to do that.
That's good news.
Yeah. Not if you've bought one of these really expensive cold
tubs. Well, now you can
tubs.
Stop doing it, because it's probably very painful.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're looking for this one, unfortunately, I don't have the title of the paper, but it's from the Department of Exercise Science and Recreation, specifically the Applied Muscle Development Lab at CUNY. That's the Lehman College in New York.
Hmm. I got one. What's a song that you like that's very sad?
The one that comes to mind first, which I guess has to be the most accurate then, is a song by a band called Weezer. And that band was popular growing up. And they had a song on one of their albums called Butterfly. And I mean, let me just get
Butterfly.
It to you. Yeah, so Butterfly, he goes outside with a mason jar, captures a butterfly, presumably puts the lid inside, wakes up, and it's dead. And he's like,
kills the butterfly.
No more sign.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that song in your head right now?
Oh, I know every single lyric. I know the whole. Yeah.
Can you imagine? And you really like it. You like that feeling of listening to that song.
The butterfly is a metaphor for.
Do you like the feeling of listening to the song?
Yes, I like. It makes
imagine
me sad.
Yeah, song, a good imagine way. The song. Imagine listening to it and not feeling the sadness.
Then I would be lacking.
Do you still like it?
Oh.
Do you still like the song? If you take the sadness or the feeling of sadness away from listening to that song.
So if the lyrics are changed, and instead of being about...
It has nothing to do with the lyrics. Just imagine that the feeling of sadness is gone.
Do I like it? No, not as much. There's something about the sadness that makes it deep.
Yeah. I'm going to play you... It's an important part that you select the song. I'm going to play you a song that I think is very sad, or music that I think is very sad. Right now, our boy Thomas Schmidt, the guy who...
Okay, so she's mourning the death of whom, is my question.
Aeneas. We're going back to college now, to the Aeneid. Virgil wrote a poem about the founder of Rome, who had the duty to save the Trojans. He was one of the ones that had survived the Trojan War. And he went from Troy up. He was supposed to found a new place in Italy, Rome. And so he had this sense of duty. On the way, he meets in Carthage. He meets a woman named Dido, and they fall in love, like one of the most famous love stories in all of literature. He leaves her because of his duty to set up Rome, to found Rome. She kills herself. That song right there is
before she does it.
Yeah, well, because Aeneas left her
right.
on his way to Italy.
Well, he had a job to do.
He had a job, and fate was more important to him than Dido, even though he loved her too. She was so,
distraught.
Absolutely.
So this is your sad song. It makes you feel feelings of sadness.
Yeah. There was a study done on why we like sad music, why human beings love sad music. And they wanted to take the intermediary out of it. Because the argument is that listening to sad music has this cathartic effect. We're moved via the sadness. Therefore, we like it, i.e. we don't like it because of the sadness, because it's illogical. It doesn't make sense to want to be sad. Sadness is a negative emotion. The people down in Australia who conducted this study, their premise or their idea was that it is the sadness itself that we want to feel.
Yeah.
So they're looking for a way to do this. And that's why I asked you to try and do this weird self-introspection and take the sadness out of the song. Do you still like it? They did that with two groups. So there was a group that selected their own piece of music, and they were either supposed to focus on being moved by the music or being sad. Like focusing on the actual emotion of sadness. The ones who were told to take the sadness out no longer liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that were asked to take being moved out of it still liked it. It's a weird, the methodology is a weird one on this, but it's a hard, because it's such a subjective thing to study. They wanted
to try. Wait a minute. Oh, so if you take the sadness out, you're not going to like it anymore.
Because it's the sadness that you like.
If it moves you and you take out the fact that it moves you.
Yeah. You could be focusing on positive emotions, not necessarily sadness.
If you take the moved part out, then you still like?
You still like the music.
So it is the fact that it's sad.
There are limitations to the study. First of all, it was only 100 college kids. That's not at all representative. And also, like I said, the methodology here is... It's not flawed. It's just a little weird.
It's complex.
Yeah.
So we human beings...
How do you imagine a song without a feeling of sadness?
But the takeaway is that we intentionally seek out sad music sometimes for that dose of sadness.
Because we like that feeling.
We want
to feel sad. And when I listen to Dido lamenting her... She's about to commit suicide. I want to feel that sadness.
Now, if people ask you, why do you listen to sad music, you can say it's because I want to be sad. And guess what? That's an objective truth, or at least based on 100 college kids down in Australia.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about music on the show. One last update, an email from Chris. And we were talking about how, going back to this study from Austria, on how music has changed over time, the lyrics have become simpler. Huh? So we had a really good point that had not occurred to me, had not occurred to you or our expert. From Chris, he said, look, just an observation. Your guest touched briefly on the way music is produced. Decades ago, a group of musicians would have to go into a studio and work out songs. This process was long and gave the individual musicians time to think about what they were doing. Fast forward to today, and songs can be crafted by a single individual with no input from the individual musicians other than the samples the producer selects. I personally don't think music is getting quote-unquote dumber, but the way it is being produced is changing significantly. I just thought that was a really good point.
Yeah, less editing, and editing from people around you.
Buddies. What I wrote back to him, I emailed him back and said, to me it feels like it's the opposite of the too many cooks problem. Mm. You have too few cooks. You can make music now as a single cook with no input from anyone.
Even if you don't really know how to cook?
Even if you don't know how to cook. And it might end up going out there. And sometimes we all need people to be like, hey, that thing you just created...
sucked.
Last point here, and this is science that really will have no effect on any of you. We try to connect a lot of our science to you, our listeners out there. And this one, it just kind of tickled my funny bone.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna dump it here at the end. Humans are going back to the moon. There is a problem... whether you're on the moon or in microgravity situations or in zero gravity, which is that human beings lose bone density. The official rate is that for every month in space, I'm reading this here, astronauts' weight-bearing bones become roughly 1% less dense if they don't take precautions to counter this loss. That's why on the space station you see the astronauts up there, they're running on the treadmill. They're trying to figure this out. So one theory that I always see, or image or video, is this von Braun wheel, or the idea of like a rotating wheel in space. It's going around and it creates gravity. If you've ever been on the gravitron is what it was called at the circus or at the fair.
Love that.
It pins you to the wall.
Took my kids there to the Dodge County Fair. They had a gravitron.
It's amazing.
You go up and
It sticks you to the wall by creating gravity by spinning around.
Yes.
That's really expensive, really difficult to create in space. And Italian researchers might have come up with a way easier solution. Have you ever seen, we're going to stick with the circus, what was called the Wall of Death? Do you know what I'm talking about there?
No.
Okay. It's a circular ring-shaped thing, and then guys on a motorcycle, it was usually guys, start going around and around and around, and their acceleration and their speed would take them up the sides of the walls, and they'd be on the motorcycle. Their bodies would be sideways to the ground.
Cool.
In Italy, they took a wall of death, popped the top off it, put a crane over it and some rubber straps going down, and harnessed two people in. These were two Italians, guy and his, they were both in their 30s, a guy and a woman. And they recreated lunar gravity, which is 1/6 of our Earth gravity.
Sure.
And they started running around.
And the idea would be to, when we've settled the moon, to create this wall of death-esque.
Yes, it doesn't have to spin.
Contraption.
You just have to build it once. It has to sit there.
And then you can strap that thing on and run.
You don't have to strap because there you already have 1/6 gravity.
Oh, yeah, of course. You just need to run. Earth.
Yeah, so then you start and there's a little ramp going up to the wall. It's more like a bowl. And at this point, the limiting factor, they're trying to figure out, okay, can you do it long enough? Because you need some speed. How long can you continue to hold that pace going around? Is it enough to really keep the bones from losing their density? But I just thought that was fun. It increases our chances of having healthy people on lunar bases. I love that.
Excellent. Before we go, I'm going to read an email that we got from Paul, and it's going to lead us into the music that will take us out of this show. It's going to be that Dido's Lament, but played by a saxophone. This is Paul. More than any other time in history, this is in reference to the wisdom talk that was played last week. More than any other time in history, mankind faces a crossroads. One path leads to despair and utter hopelessness. The other to total extinction. Let us pray we have the wisdom to choose correctly.
Wow. Yeah.
Quoting Woody Allen, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a controversial source. That reminded me of a final email here from Anastasia, who says, I love your show. That's how she signed it off. And she said, here's my simple take on it. The opposite of foolishness is wisdom. But I like that, Anastasia. I also like foolishness as well.
Can we just let the saxophone play?
We can let the saxophone play. Real quick, though, what have we learned? Because there's been a lot of science and a lot of emails.
I forgot.
Take a break, a 1 week break or more from social media.
Yeah.
That's very important. Ice baths, they're good for reducing inflammation.
Yeah.
Not if you're trying to build muscle mass.
We like music that is sad because we want to feel sadness. And again, the saxophone is coming in a second here, guys.
And what? If you want to keep your bones and your muscles strong on the moon, which who doesn't, create the wall of death on the moon and run around it. Email us, su@dw.com.
Scripted.